Hey everybody, Dave Hodges here, host of The Common Sense Show. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. This is The Common Sense Show. You know that. That's why you're here. This is a digital platform in part. We're also terrestrial. Take the digital and share it. I don't know if you saw Jesse Waters' piece on Fox. Someone sent it to me. And it was a YouTube reproduction. He went through New York City asking people who Kamala Harris was and what she's done. We have so many uneducated people about current events today. Please help them. Please send shows like this out, particularly this interview. We have Susan Radford with us, and I got to tell you, this is going to be a terrific interview, continuing in our series, and we got a parallel series going on TV with regard to the royal family. It is royally interesting, to say the least, and it's not one of these TMZ follow them around to see who they're dating. No, this is really important stuff that we're covering. But we've been covering a lot with China on a book that Susan wrote. And we'll be talking about that a little bit more later with regard to her website and her book. But we're going to be exploring the Chinese connections. And we're also going to get a little bit into the Pope's betrayal of his own religion. And of course, you know, if you've been following me, I've been writing about that for years when he proposed the merger of Christianity and Islam. And we're going to really get into even a more dire proposal. So we got a full board here. Susan, welcome back to the show. I'm glad you've agreed to continue this series because it's so in-depth. And I don't think anyone else is covering this.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me, Dave. And I always find our discussions very fascinating.
They are. But I'm being serious. I tell a lot of my colleagues, yeah, I'm good friends with, you know, Paul Preston, Steve Quayle. And I tell these guys, some of these guys about the interviews. And I'm going to have to get you on Paul Preston's show because he has a big thing about the Jesuits in California. He knows all the history. And he'd find your stuff fascinating in that area. And I tell them this, and they go, wow, this isn't being covered anywhere else. And it really isn't. This is really an exclusive program, people. This is exclusive information. And you darn sure won't see this on CNN and the controlled opposition Fox News. I guarantee you. You'll never see this. Listen, some of the people on Fox News, I think, are pretty good. But the reality is this, is they can only go so far. When's the last time you heard them talk about election integrity? Never. When, you know, they get a little bit into the vaccine, but they don't really tell you what's in it. they don't get into the fact that 97% of a town in Ireland have been vaccinated and 60% of them now have COVID. They don't get into that stuff. So we get into the stuff that matters here. But Susan, last time you were on, we talked about China with regard to immigration and how they're controlling the immigration process for their own benefit.
Correct.
And I wanted to ask you a question I neglected to ask last time. I have a source within Pemex, the Mexican oil company, and he tells me that regularly the Chinese officials come in there and tell them what to do, order them what to do. And he said, we're laying pipeline in Mexico that would make you believe we're going to have a military buildup in northern Mexico. And he said, Dave, that furthers your belief about a Red Dawn invasion one day. Do you know anything about that?
I do not. I know that Mexico at one point was it was controlled by the Spanish monarch, which was then overthrown. The regime was overthrown by the Jesuits, who then handed Mexico over to the United States, which was controlled by, you know, affiliated groups, Jesuits and so forth. And I know that Mexico has been trying to reclaim California and all of the former states that the different racist groups have, you know, have argued were stolen from Mexico. Groups like La Raza, which are financed by Soros and other globalists. But it wouldn't surprise me that they are trying to do that. I think that the fact that the Haitians are being escorted to the border after Obama placed them there in 2010. In the two countries that actually including Mexico, Brazil, Chile, and Mexico are the three major trading partners of the United States, and they are clearly trying to weaponize immigration against the United States. So it would not surprise me if, you know, they are in fact planning a Red Dawn invasion from Mexico, based upon what you're saying.
Well, the one thing that supports that too is it's no secret, and my Border Patrol sources, of which I have two really good ones, tell me that their intel, what they get in their own briefings before they go out on their daily missions, and they've seen evidence of it as well, that the cartels are now armed like light infantry. They have like mobile MRAPs, automatic weapons, rudimentary surface-to-air where they could bring down a helicopter. And that only could come from one place. They didn't manufacture it themselves. Clearly, China's supplying them.
That's true. It could also be our own CIA.
That's true.
Supplying,
yeah.
You know.
But I just wondered if this is not the Chinese version of Fast and Furious.
It could very well be. You know, I think we have to remain vigilant.
Yeah, it really is. But I really found it interesting about how you link together the control of immigration from China. It is definitely weaponized immigration. What do you think? And I went back and I listened to the end of our interview, and I'm not sure we answered this question entirely. And you can't answer all questions in a 50-minute interview. But what do you think the end game is for the Chinese with their goal for disruptive mass immigration? What are they trying to get at the end of the day?
Okay, so I think on one level, China does not believe that it can survive on its own, given that much of its land has been polluted. And I think they need more resources, like natural resources and land upon which to farm, in order to sustain their population. So they're looking forward to a Chinese century. And what they've done is they've sent Chinese immigrants and executives over to Brazil, Chile, Mexico, who are working with those governments, forging deals, engaging in various forms of debt diplomacy, and they're moving the people off the land, and in the process that they're able to claim land for themselves. So I've also read that they are engaging in different technological exchanges and different partnerships. So I think that they want to move the people off the land. And then America, of course, has a very strong control grid over, the elites have been building a control system over America. So if the immigrants come into America, they will owe their allegiance to China, essentially, since they will be given jobs, they'll be subsidized by the taxpayer, you know, they'll be given the opportunities that they need. In other words, they will be rendered dependent. And then by being dependent, they'll have to, carry out the will of those who, upon whose good graces they depend, which would be, the immigration groups and government leaders who then answer to China.
Wow. That's really... You're making me think here. The wheels, you can probably hear the wheels grinding here in my head. That's a really insightful statement you just made. Because I have to draw this conclusion from what you said. Because events don't happen in isolation. If loyalty is going to be to China, and clearly the Democrats think they're importing Democratic voters eventually. Mm-hmm. That's why the push for amnesty. By the way, they're going to spend $100 billion in this reconciliation bill towards amnesty propaganda. That means the Democrats are in bed with the Chinese on this immigration issue. They're working hand in hand with them. I mean, that's the only thing I can conclude from what you just said.
They always have been. But I don't think they necessarily need Democratic voters, since they've already, rigged the political system.
True.
To secure votes for themselves.
Yep.
But they have built a very lucrative cottage industry around immigration. So you have a lot of Democrats, and unfortunately some conservatives, who are involved in subsidized housing, Section 8, for immigrants, who get preferential housing backed by the taxpayer over those of needy Americans. And of course, if the taxpayer can provide them with free education, free medical care, free housing, then they can afford to take jobs at a lower wage than Americans, and many Americans are, of course, being pushed out of their jobs or being offered salaries that are not, you know, that would not sustain them properly. So essentially, you're looking at these immigrant forces, invading forces, taking jobs away from Americans and owing their allegiance to China.
Hmm.
It's a very dangerous mix, and I think the immigration is a very lucrative industry, and to see that, you only need to look at the government contracts that are given to community organizations that are helping these groups come into America.
Well, the Catholic Charities groups comes to mind, and so I'm going to also jump into another side of this too. You have Democrats, you have Chinese, and you have the Jesuits. And then, of course, you've got the UN. That's obvious.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Did you agree with the Jesuit connection because of the Catholic Charities?
I don't know that the Jesuits are specifically involved in these particular groups. They tend to be organized by poor folks, like community organizers who are organized by the churches at a higher level. And the church congregations are mobilized to kind of lobby on behalf of the elites. So originally you'd have, the church people would form their own opinions on what policies to back, what, policies corresponded or resonated with their value system. Today you have global structures like the World Council of Churches, the Vatican, and they claim to speak for all of the congregations that are, that follow down from the umbrella, that they hold above the other churches. So they, in turn, mobilize community organizations to go and lobby government to help immigrants come to America, to help provide them with support to get them connected to jobs and housing and medical care. I haven't seen the Jesuits specifically. I would think that they would be involved in maybe, working on intelligence and more sophisticated operations. Most of the immigration is controlled by kind of grassroots activists who truly believe, at least many of them do, that they are doing a good charitable thing, by bringing needy people into the U.S.
Well, I think at the grassroots level, yeah, that people have to believe in what they're doing for the most part. I do agree with that. We're helping people who need help. Just is the goal of Chinese-based immigration, is it to deculturize America, to make America lose its identity?
That's part of it. They know that Americans, especially white Christian Americans, are very individualistic. So they have wanted to destroy an individualistic white America, and I think by flooding the country with a lot of groups of people who are antagonistic to the West or who are conditioned to believe that white people are the enemy, they will come in and serve as a conquering force where they feel entitled to benefits. And once the government is able to establish a tradition based upon dependency, you have entire groups of people who are easily controllable. So I think that's part of it, and I think they also want to bankrupt the U.S. government, which they've largely already done. But by bringing more and more people into the country who are dependents and who are going to be living off of benefits, entitlements, and so forth, I think you're creating a heavier weight upon the federal government, a greater tax burden, and in turn, those white Americans who might have, who might be in the rapidly shrinking middle class, will face even a greater, tax burden. So they're looking at more of a redistribution of wealth from the middle class to the elites on behalf of the poor, even though the poor only marginally benefit, from those resources.
So it's largely a contribution to an overall wealth redistribution scheme in America.
That's part of it, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that entirely. I've made the argument for years, probably 20 years now, and I've said, no matter how good our hearts are, we can't afford to take on millions of people, the schools, the roads, the welfare. We can't do that. We're not bringing in people based on needs-based immigration. It's basically we're getting people with third to sixth grade educations. We're getting a lot of criminals. We're getting a higher percentage of criminals than exist in the American population. That's what the research studies used to show us 10 years ago. And I can't believe that that's changed. We're not checking. We don't know.
And of course, the criminals will wreak havoc on American society, which will provide grounds for, tighter law enforcement measures against the people. And I think they've also privatized the prisons. So every prisoner every person who's incarcerated can enrich the government contractors, who are, working on those prisons.
Do you know that's something that's never discussed? I wrote a series of articles. Oh gosh, 7-8 years ago maybe, on privatized prisons and the major corporations that were behind them, like Target, for example. And you don't see this anywhere else. You're really one of the first guests who's ever brought this up to me. The privatized prisons. And they were creations largely of the Bush family. Did you know that?
That's correct. I did not know that.
Yeah, the Bush crime family.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, I interviewed an author, Russ, and can't remember his last name now, Russ Baker, and I interviewed Russ, and he wrote a book called The Bush Crime Family, and he'd actually gotten a lot of attention in Democratic venues in the media because it was against the Bushes, but man, he exposed so much of this stuff. But the Bush crime family was behind the privatized prisons to a large extent. But they're typical, A owns B, which owns C, which owns D. So they're able to distance themselves from on-the-ground operations. But when you trace the companies back to who the source was, it came back to the Bush crime family.
Unbelievable.
And HW was at the heart of a lot of it. Yeah, and I actually published articles that talked about the lineage of this, and a lot of it was based on Russ's work, which was really, really good. That's phenomenal. What were the Bushes' relationship with China? This is something that I've never asked before, but was there one?
There was one. George Herbert Walker Bush accompanied Nixon there was a CIA safe house, and I believe in Manhattan, in New York. But he accompanied Kissinger to those meetings with communist Chinese leaders, where they were kind of plotting how they wanted to, engage communist China against the United States. And Bush was also, I believe, he was the head of the liaison office to China, and I believe he was also ambassador to Taiwan. But he was working under the Nixon administration, which normalized relationships with China.
And CIA director.
And CIA director. And mm-hmm. I think he salivated over the vast markets. You had an untapped market, I think, of a billion, I don't know what it was then, a billion or 1.5 billion people who could provide cheap labor and who also did not have all of the material items that we have here in the West. So they would, purchase really everything that a modern society needs from the multinationals. So I think he was trying to, establish markets for the multinationals as well.
Interesting. So he was in on it from the beginning.
Yes, he was.
There's something else about China I always wondered, and people don't address this much, but I remember Hank Paulson, former Secretary of Treasury, head of Goldman Sachs, the man who said, if you don't give them the bailout in 2008, you're going to have tanks on the streets, that Hank Paulson. I remember him being involved in the creation of these vacant Chinese high-rise apartment buildings in various locations where they were going to move farmers out of the agricultural areas and turn them into industrial workers. Whatever happened to that project, the ghost cities?
I believe that a lot of them are still vacant, and they were not built very well. I think a number of them are crumbling already. But I think an interesting aspect of this one is that a lot of our pension funds were invested in some of those properties. And two is that I believe that the investors could only lease the properties like for maybe like 90 or so years, after which point the ownership would return to communist China. So this was a situation where you could, you know, potentially lease or rent, but you would never own.
That's why Goldman Sachs was involved.
Interesting. That's true.
Yeah, and Hank Paulson. Hank Paulson was at the center of this. You know, I didn't get into this really deeply, but I talked about forced mass migration. And what prompted me to write this was an executive order issued by Barack Obama, 3603, I think it was, where he talked about when an emergency I declare, I can seize any resource, and I can move people to labor camps, and he even said in there unpaid, these experts will be unpaid, and basically total domination, and when that executive order came out, 13603, that was it. When that came out, I was looking at these Chinese ghost cities, and I said, well, how are they going to get the people there? And then I started hearing stories about forced relocation, that the Chinese troops would roll into a village, and they would say, you got 30 minutes to pack up your stuff. And there were some stories coming out of China that way. Actually, one of these stories came out through my church, and we actually talked to a refugee that this had happened in their village. And I thought, how interesting. This parallels what Obama says he can do in an emergency. So yeah, this was a 2011 labor. Executive order. Have you ever heard of that 13603?
I have not. I do know that that Obama was attempting to acquire fast track permission to fast track workers from Latin America into the U.S. and to allow them to take American jobs.
That's true. That's true. But I should probably send you a link on this, because this executive order is very telling for times of stress and how far these presidents think they can go. I probably have written on an aspect of this executive order probably about 15 times and through the years since they published this. But I was really disturbed. They can control all food. I wrote an article once. I said Obama's executive order reintroduces slavery to America. And I talked about the compulsory assignment of people to labor camps. And it's right in there. It says it directly. Let me go to my document here and I'll pull it up. Okay, this is it. Section 502. The head of each agency otherwise delegated functions is delegated to the president of the authority to employ persons of outstanding experience and ability without compensation, and to employ experts, consultants, or organizations to the benefit of the U.S. government. The authority delegated by this section may not be redelegated. That's pretty clear, isn't it?
It's slave labor.
It's slave labor, yeah. Section 502, Executive Order 13603. That's why I got interested in these stories of forced relocation in China to the ghost cities. Because I said, gee, is one force doing the same thing in both countries? We got the planning part here in America, and they're doing the actual thing in China?
You're looking at the Shadow Rothschilds controlling, you know, both sides. And, you know, they have a human resources department. They don't view us as individuals, but as assets to be exploited to enrich their companies and to generate profits for them. So I'm not surprised. And of course, they want the taxpayer to support as much as possible, the housing and other infrastructure and support for the workers, so they can maximize their profits and invest as little as possible in the people as they can.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. I mean, we've even seen this on the micro level with Medicare. As I've dug into some of these bills in Congress, on the surface, they're disguising what they're doing to the elderly, and I mean the Biden administration. They want to give a 6% increase in Social Security benefits. And they go, "Oh, that's really good. Thank you, Biden. You're so nice." But behind the scenes, they're really cutting back on the medications they're going to make available, and people could be in dire straits health-wise because of this.
But at the same time, China is producing the medication.
Yeah, exactly.
So that could be a blessing in disguise.
Well, yeah. I did a podcast last night. It was kind of tongue-in-cheek, and it was an 8-minute podcast, and I said, what's the one product that we don't have to worry about being on holding pattern off a port on the West Coast? And so theme to Jeopardy plays, come back and say, it's anything manufactured within the United States. And this is what needs to happen. We need to get an economic divorce from China.
We need to go back to reinvesting in the United States. And we have enough energy and natural resources here, you know, for us to be energy independent, you know, for centuries. You know, we don't need to rely upon foreign countries. We have, you know, beautiful natural resources, environments, and everything that we need to build, you know, a solid industrial base and to be entirely self-sufficient. Unfortunately, the globalists have wanted to compromise that, to link us into dependencies and interdependencies with foreign nations so that we can no longer act within our own interests.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I couldn't agree with you more. Well, before we leave this topic here, I want to just go off in a different direction, and I'm hoping, and I suspect you'll have information on this. Soros is heavily involved in the immigration, and that's stating the obvious, mm-hmm. I know. And he's heavily involved in China, has been. He's heavily involved in helping prosecutors get elected in communities that are basically turning their back on the rule of law and letting murderers run and roam the streets of America, like the Attorney General in Illinois. And when you look at Soros's influence here, to criminalize America at the local level, have the thugs, you know, run wild, immigration, election fraud, which he's tied into. This is what my research has found. Who does Soros answer to? We never hear this. Who is his immediate supervisor? Do you know?
I would have to say that, you know, he would ultimately answer to the Rothschilds, and what you're describing is a playbook that they've always gone by. They want to have freedom, but not, they're promoting freedom, but not freedom of conscience. It's freedom to do as they want, you know, to engage in looting, hate speech, you know, against the, you know, the main culture, and to engage in any number of criminal acts to tear society apart, to be able to loot and plunder without consequence. At the same time, you know, they have they've criminalized basic human behavior such that the average American today commits at least 2 felonies a day. The law-abiding citizen could be thrown into prison violating a law that they didn't even know existed, while, you know, the criminals are free to run rampant, as we saw during you know, the Black Lives Matter rampages, you know, through the cities.
Hmm. And
so it's a kind of revolutionary. Go ahead.
Well, along the lines of China too, I don't know if you remember hearing this in the news, but on 3 instances, Antifa was busted with weapons caches. This actually came from Doug Erickson, who was in the DHS at the time, and he was involved in one of these. And they busted these weapons caches for Antifa, and China was the source.
Wow, I'm not surprised. But again, when we look at China, you're looking at, you know, who controls China. China is controlled by our multinationals and by the Rothschilds and ultimately the Vatican. So, you know, they are working behind the mask of China.
Hmm.
To promote a communist agenda.
Well, I do want to get into the religion part of it too, but first we're going to take a break here and we're going to kind of roll everything into one here because I hate to interrupt the flow of this. It's so interesting. So, ladies and gentlemen, I just wanted to come back and just tell you every day there's a new reason to tell you the food supply chain is in trouble. There is one positive benefit, though. I did a podcast early this morning, and I talked about how a lot of young corporates are quitting their jobs and going to work on farms because they're tired of the corruption, and this is what they cite. I wouldn't say it's a huge trend, but it is an interesting developing trend. But that's one positive on the food supply. But ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you, the food supply is big, 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 big trouble. Big trouble. We're eating next year's harvest, and every farmer I talk to of any substance tells me the same thing. They're all worried. The government's paying people not to grow food. In fact, they're coercing them with threatening them. You won't get your insurance if something happens if you don't go along with what we say. It's just outright coercion from the USDA. Ladies and gentlemen, a lot of you know this is all true, and you've procrastinated. When hyperinflation hits, and we're close, we were in a restaurant last night, and we looked at the prices on the new menu. They went up about 20 to 25%. Hyperinflation's on our doorstep. I can't say what's going to trigger it, what day it's going to occur, what month it's going to occur, but it is going to occur. People are running from the petrodollar. It's the only backing we've had for a long time, and we've got impossible debt. And if we pass this reconciliation bill, you're going to wish you had about 10 years worth of food. Right now, the recommendation is 2 years. That's what the experts say, Bob Griswold, Daisy Luther, 2 years plus seeds. We can help you with that. A lot of the storable food companies aren't in business now. You may have seen that they can't deliver their product. Some of them are out of business until January. Well, not us. MPS is cruising right along, business as usual, because when the pandemic hit, we got our butt kicked. We fell 6-8 weeks behind in delivery, and they did what they needed to do to fix it, and that's carrying us through what we're going through right now. You need to get what you can get while you can get it. Restaurant quality food, you know, it's not, I'm going to say it's not gourmet, it's not organic, but it's good. It's palatable and it's diverse. And you'll get different kinds of foodstuffs here. And people just say, Dave, I could live on this. You could. Absolutely. You're going to get a nice discount. That's all available for information at preparewithdave.com. Please do not let the grass grow under your feet on this, folks, because you can't trust this government to feed you. They left 1,000 American citizens behind enemy lines in Afghanistan. You think they're going to take care of your food needs? Think again. That's preparewithdave.com. Also, too, it is my belief, and I've acted upon this belief because I went from advertiser to customer, that an organization like Noble Gold can help bulletproof your assets. We're not going to get through what's coming without taking hits. All of us are going to take hits. But and you don't want to be totally devastated. Get your money the heck out of the bank. Use operating capital. Get into alternative investments and know how to manage this. And this is what Noble Gold specializes in. And after I advertised for them for 2 years, I said, these guys know what they're talking about. And I became a customer. They can help you. No pressure. They'll send you material for free. They'll give you all the information you want for free. And they'll never pressure you. They make you close the deal. That's how they're trained. You know, I know Colin Plume, the owner, very well. And he said, this is what we want to do business, Dave. We don't pressure people into doing anything with their assets, but we're going to help them get through what's coming. And we all agree what's coming. All of us agree. So what are you going to do? Well, you can call them. You owe it to your family if you have assets to protect. 877-646-5347. That's 877-646-5347. So I just want to be honest with you here, folks. I have the food. I am a client of Noble Gold. And on this next product, our satellite phone, yeah, I've got a sat phone. And people say, Dave, is it expensive? That's the first question people ask me. I pay 1/4 the cost for my sat phone as I do for my cell phone bill. And this sat phone will probably survive communications takedowns. I say probably because I don't know the latest thing the government has up their sleeve. But I know right now if they could interfere in sat phone communications, they would. And they're not, because they'd have to take too many of their own systems down. And so this sat phone's terrific. It's also good for emergencies. You're in an area where your cell phone doesn't work. Well, the sat phone will. If you get outside and can see the sky, your sat phone will work. And I always say it's a good thing to have. You don't want to be without communication. And when America rises up against this tyranny, the continuity of government plans can kick in. They'll shut the cities down. They'll encircle us. They'll shut the power off. They'll shut the internet off. They'll shut off your cell phones and your landlines. This could be the only form of communication you have left, except for the few short waves and ham radios that are available. So I highly recommend you look at the sat phone. 855-980-5830. That's 855-980-5830. And I want you to know on this show, with advertising, I put my money where my mouth is. Susan, I really want to get into the issue that we talked about in our pre-air discussion. It was fascinating. And you were talking about the Pope, and he has some ulterior motives with regard to the Catholic religion in the Vatican.
Yes. So this was actually reported a few days ago on True News. And I can quote, this is from the LifeSite News website. And on that site, Archbishop Vigliano stated, "We realize that Pope Francis is carrying out the task entrusted to him by the globalist elite, which wants him to be the liquidator of the Catholic Church and the founder of a philanthropic ecumenical sect of Masonic inspiration that is meant to constitute a universal religion in support of a new world order." In the context in which this statement emerged was that the Prime Minister of France brought before the Pope, grievances from all of the pedophile allegations against the priest to the Vatican. And the Vatican, in turn, is going to have to pay restitution to the victims. So potentially you're looking at, you know, millions, hundreds of millions to billions of dollars that the Catholic Church will have to pay out. If that happens, what will potentially happen is that the Catholic Church will be liquidated and then it will cease to exist. And when they're talking about an ecumenical religion, what that means is merging the different religions of the world, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Catholicism, all into one umbrella organization controlled by a globalist hierarchy that will determine the values and the agenda for the world. So this could be like a universal religion of the type that the East Asians, Central Asians, have been promoting for quite a while now. So it's the New World Order religion.
Wow. That's all I got to say as well. Listen, I know enough about this that what you're saying makes perfect sense to me. Perfect sense. Is this the back door to destroy people's faith in Jesus and in the Christian religion?
It is in a sense, and I believe that is largely already happened. When the ecumenical movement started, it was pitched to the Christian community as a way for them to conserve resources by, you know, having different denominations exist under the same church establishment. But eventually it came, you know, and they also wanted to have the Christian denominations united under the spiritual leadership of Jesus Christ. But what it has come to represent instead is a material unity of the Christian religion, where they have kind of gutted the substance of the religion to, since the denominations have many, disparate tenets and belief systems that are not entirely compatible. So in order for them to merge, you have to, take out the substance of the religion and to have like an amorphous, feel-good type of Christianity that means nothing and can be used to mobilize, the Christians to believe whatever you want them to believe. So just as we have now a living constitution, we have a living Bible. And that Bible can be reinterpreted generation after generation after generation to suit the globalist agenda. So that's maybe a long way of answering that. What you're asking is absolutely correct.
Weaponizing religion against freedom.
Correct. That's correct.
And actually, too, it serves a lower purpose: stealing the potential of the soul in the afterlife.
This is true. It's becoming a material religion, like a very materialistic religion, which is rejecting or even not even acknowledging Jesus as Lord and Savior. So the way that they will use ecumenicism is they would say, for example, well, a good Christian would support open borders. Don't you want to be charitable and give to others? A good Christian would support Obamacare, because you want to support the least of these, even though Obamacare, drove up the price of health care, actually putting it out of the reach of many middle-class workers. So you use religion as a way to kind of coerce and guilt-trip Christians into supporting an agenda that really suits the corporate and the elite agenda.
There was a series on, I think it was USA Network, called Colony. And you didn't see the aliens much. The aliens had devastated the Earth, and then they put this puppet government in charge, and it was extremely ruthless. But it was high-tech martial law, Chinese style. And in the show, one of the things that they portrayed was the arrival of these aliens. And you never really saw the aliens. Everything was about the interaction between the puppet government and the people's struggle for freedom. But there was a religion that formed that they called this the Great Arrival, and that someday the aliens would come to Earth, and it was kind of like championed as like the second coming of Christ, you know, in the book of Revelations. And I'm sorry, long-winded explanation here to get to my point. One of the things that my father told me about was he stumbled across something called Project Bluebeam in the 1980s. Told me about it in 1984, but he learned about it from a retired colleague of his, and he was able to confirm it. And now this is not uncommon knowledge among people that do what I do. And Project Bluebeam is the high-tech alien invasion, fake invasion of the Earth, designed to get nations to give up their sovereignty, unite under one global governance, but also to invoke a single religious aspect that would be used to control the people. Is that where this is headed? Is there any chance that this is part of Project Bluebeam?
It's part of this wider globalist agenda, and I don't know that they will be able to use the space alien narrative now, because I think too many people are aware of it and would likely see through it. But for generations, at least since the world wars, the elites have been promoting the idea of a living God, and the living God was meant to be an individual who assumes the level or the nature of a God, such that they would create a scenario that would put the very existence, the existential essence of humanity in peril, and then to have that individual or group of individuals come in and rescue humanity. In turn, they expected the people to worship them as a god, as a living god.
Maybe climate change. Maybe climate change will fit that model.
Correct, climate change, and you can see, you know, that they are moving in that direction with the Great Reset.
And that makes sense. If they're going to do an economic overhaul, they would also do a religious overhaul. That's interesting. I hadn't considered that respect. But what the Pope is saying, and what you just recounted, it sounds a lot like this goes hand in hand with the Reset.
It really does. And in Christianity, you know, Christians rely upon God for their material and spiritual welfare. Under an elite structure, you would rely upon the globalists for your money, for your, you know, guaranteed income, your housing, your food. You would not look to the Bible, but look to the globalists for how to think, for what values you should espouse. Within a Christian system, you know, God will bless those who serve Him, and sometimes provide you with challenges to enable you to grow spiritually. Within a globalist system, since they control so many different aspects of society, they can determine who wins, who loses, who will get the promotion, who will fail. So they want you to kind of act as God, to be as God, to be worshipped, you know, at the pinnacle of society. So they will be assuming that the powers that they believe God has.
And this is why they're looking first to unify the religions before they bastardize them.
I think they've already bastardized them.
Okay. Give us an example. I agree with you. I think you're right. But give me an example of how they bastardize Christianity.
Gosh, there's so many. They have originally Christianity was of held the belief, or the adherents of Christianity believed that you would love the sinner but hate the sin. So a homosexual would be welcome into the Christian fold, but then the Christian view would be that, you know, that they would counsel the homosexual to come to God, or to, you know, if he decided that that homosexuality was a sin, that the Christians would be there to provide, you know, support to lead them into a heterosexual lifestyle. But that person would not be judged or would not be condemned. What they've done now is they have promoted, they've mobilized the church behind homosexuality, to not only be tolerant of homosexuality, but to promote it as a lifestyle. And I saw how they were actually promoting homosexuality into the Boy Scouts. And the Boy Scouts were created by Christians, you know, to instill good moral character, you know, within young boys. There was a lot of outcry against what they were trying to do on grounds that, you know, if you're bringing pedophiles and homosexuals into the Boy Scouts, that potentially some, you know, you're putting children in harm's way, and potentially some of those children could be molested. The church, in turn, accused the detractors of hate speech and said that you're not being tolerant. It's unchristian to even think like that. And of course, the inevitable happened. A number of boys were molested by these pedophile priests, or not pedophile priests, but pedophile homosexual leaders, and the Boy Scouts ended up being disbanded.
Interesting. That's it parallels the church. What you described is sounds like the process they're going to take the church down on. You have enough scandal along these lines, these same lines. The church goes away, or is forced to consolidate and fold. And then the Boy Scouts too. Did the Boy Scouts evolve into anything else?
That's a good question. I believe that they have disbanded altogether. I know that they were trying to bring girls into the Boy Scouts, even though the girls had their own Girl Scout unit.
Yeah, I know.
Which is very kind of odd.
That's really interesting. So are we going to see Chrislam, or are we just going to see a general unification?
I think if you look at where the Christian evangelical leaders are taking us, they're moving us into a universal religion of peace and a global unity. But ironically, a number of, you know, the greatest warmongers are supporters of this movement, including, for example, Dick Cheney, you know, who's a great proponent of the, you know, the Iraq War. So they're moving us into a universal religion where you'll believe in nothing at all, you'll believe in anything, and your values will be shaped by what the global elites tell you that you have to believe if you want to advance or exist in their societies.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. This is incredible. But if we read Revelations and we take it its literal word, this work will not be completed.
That's true. Now, if you believe in the story of Jesus, you know, which, you know, I do, Jesus predicted what would happen. He predicted the end times, and his predictions were encoded in the Rosicrucian cosmology. And he did predict the end times, and he said that the world would become very, very wicked. Every institution, every facet of society would become unbelievably corrupt, and I believe that this is where we are now. And then once the corruption had reached this, you know, extreme state, very dark state, that there would be a judgment, and then from that judgment, the evildoers would be brought to justice, and a new world would emerge from the ashes. And the new world would be based upon integrity, virtue, you know, and the, you know, revival of Christianity and the, you know, the God, you know, the God-sanctioned world.
Yeah, but there's that little obstacle that we usually call the tribulation. In other words, there's going to be literally hell to pay. There's where the phrase comes from. There's going to be hell to pay in the tribulation. First 3.5 years are relatively calm and look good, and then all hell breaks loose. And I don't know that we're in the tribulation yet. Some people think we're in the glorious 3.5, but I said there's nothing glorious about where we're at. I think there has to be a fake cleansing go on. What do you think?
I know that Obama was viewed as the Antichrist, and that the second coming of Christ was to follow after his administration. That hasn't happened yet. I do believe that we are experiencing judgment as a country and as a people. America has sinned terribly, and you know, we're seeing the collapse of our society as a result of, you know, not adhering to our Judeo-Christian values.
I would agree with that. But Obama's not done. I would say this, too. He's serving out his third term right now. Everyone I talk to and know, and even in politics, they'll tell you privately Obama and Susan Rice are controlling the Biden administration.
I believe in that, and I believe also that Obama was recruited by the Bushes, by the Bush senior, since I believe his father was a mercenary in one of Bush's armies, and I think it was in Indonesia. So he was recruited, and then Obama was groomed for the role that he would play.
The Weathermen Underground, the leaders of that recruited Obama for politics. Bill Ayers.
And how true.
Well, I used to interview the late Larry Grath while he was an FBI informant. And he was sent to penetrate the Weathermen Underground. And people think it was a hippie group. It was not a hippie group at all. These were highly educated, master's degree type people from Ivy League schools. Bill Ayers' dad, Tom Ayers, was the head of Con Ed. They were communist. They were Marxists. They were in the form that we see today in our government. And this is what they wanted to bring America. And they found Obama, Bill Ayers did, and he actually launched his state senatorial campaign from his Hyde Park, Chicago home. I know that for a fact. This came to us from Larry Grathwall, who used to come on various shows like ours and tell the stories. And Bill Ayers is still active. He visited Obama in the White House years later. We're talking Bill Ayers was around 1968, Weathermen Underground, recruited Obama in the 80s. Was it 80s, early 90s? But anyway, he recruited him and has been with him every step of the way. I think Obama is here to stay. I don't think he's done. So if people think he's the Antichrist, I don't have an opinion on that. But if they think he is and his presidency has ended, I would say don't make that judgment based on the ending of his presidency. He's still very much in control. Are you aware of the EFA?
I am not.
It's his private police force, and it's numerous, thousands, that do his bidding. It's like an organized Antifa, but they're very covert.
It sounds like an offshoot of one of his community organizations.
Yeah, except they're militaristic.
True.
Antifa's just rabble-rousers. They're not militaristic. BLM is not militaristic. This group is very militaristic. I actually looked into this. This is how I actually met my friend, Doug Thornton, who used to be with DHS. He was a friend of Steve Quayle and was a confidential source, because Doug obviously couldn't say, hey, I'm from DHS and I'm telling you this stuff. But Doug encountered these groups when he was working with DHS. And he had some supervisory capabilities and leadership responsibilities. And he would encounter them on this level, and he was in planning meetings, and the EFA was off limits. They couldn't touch him.
Interesting. Well, you know, a lot of people, you know, just to build on what you're saying, a lot of people believe that these communist and militaristic groups are an outgrowth of liberalism, but conservatism and liberalism are moving in lockstep. In fact, communist China was built by Yale University, by Skull and Bones, you know, with Bush Junior and Senior serving as Skull and Bones members. So communism is a movement. It's a phenomenon that is being promoted by corporate America to essentially to redistribute wealth from the people to themselves and to be able to terrorize the government into concessions.
Yeah, exactly.
Require more natural resources and power.
You are 100% correct. I've made the argument there's no difference between the Republicans today and the Democrats in Congress. The Republicans sound like they're for freedom when they go on Fox, but they do nothing. Mm-hmm. And we got about 30 seconds left. I want you to tell people how they can follow your good work, your website and so forth.
Oh, well, thank you so much. My website is susanbradford.org. You can find my books and audiobooks there, and you're also welcome to contact me if you have any questions.
Yeah, excellent. Excellent stuff. This is just part of a series we're doing, but Susan has some expertise here that I don't really have access to a lot of people who have the same expertise, so we keep having her back on. Susan, excellent work again today. Thank you for being all over the map with us, and I look forward to our next discussion.
Looking forward to it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.